Well, hey everybody, welcome back to So You Want to Be in Ministry. I'm Tim, and you know, we are all about trying to highlight faithfulness in ministry. We absolutely want to make sure we're capturing individuals and stories that have been faithful and are being faithful within ministry. We also want to capture and equip you to be able to be faithful in ministry and finish out the call that God gave you. Today, it's pretty exciting for me, the individual that we had on. His name's Travis Altman. I got to work with him for a little bit at the current church that I'm at. He's done various ministries. He'll talk about that. And currently, he's actually outside of ministry. Like, he's doing ministry in his local church, but he's not in a full-time capacity. But he talks about his story and how he really wasn't healthy in ministry. And as he's left ministry, he's gotten incredibly healthy. And I think it was his perspective on that has been something really, I thought it was really good. This is one of the best interviews I think that I've had, at least maybe in a while, because he was so authentic and just so vulnerable on what was going on in his life and then how that's corrected as he's left. And I think he's got some really cool things to say. So let's get into this interview with Travis. Well, hey, Travis, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you on today. It's good to have you, man. It's good to just see your face again.
Brother, you flip that on like a switch. Like, we were just conversing beforehand. Don't act like we weren't even just talking and you trying to figure this stuff out, get your computer working. And then it's like the lights turn on and Tim Weirock is on the mic, ready to roll.
Yep, I'm ready to go. Well, hey, like, I have put some bloopers out there in these things, but I can't let everybody see me struggling with audio.
Yeah, I mean, the cursing is quite offensive, so probably best to keep that out for sure. I get you. It's a PR move. I respect it.
So everybody, I know Travis because we served on a church staff together. He was over a lot of creative areas and worship areas, and so I got to spend a little over a year with him. But now I get to interview him because you're doing something else, but we're going to have an honest conversation of just how you've gotten healthy after ministry. So why don't you tell us your story? How did you kind of get into ministry? How did you even take on that path and move that direction?
Yeah, so I when I was in middle school, I started attending a church that, I was pretty much like any other middle schooler, like just awkward. I didn't hit 5 foot until like ninth grade. So it was like a little soccer ball. It was like this chubby little kid. And I liked to sing. My voice hadn't quite dropped yet. And so I don't know what convicted me to do this, but I did the middle school talent show at my school. And my youth pastor jumped in to play guitar for me so I could sing. And dude, that day, like, he jumped in, helped me out. And I was like the one day of the year that I was like felt like the coolest kid ever. And I just remember him coming up to me afterwards and he was like, "Hey, like, do you play guitar?" I was like, not really. He's like, "Well, you sing." Like, I had this dream like that you would be on stage like singing and playing guitar for thousands of people. Do you want to learn how to play guitar? And I was like, sure, why not? So he just sat down with me and was very kind, very patient. And just that's where it all started, man. Like, I was just playing in my youth group and struggling my way through, and ended up jumping into like desiring, like, this is what I want to do with my life. This is the path for me right now. So jumped into ministry internship with Bible school, studying biblical studies with worship at the same time. So I was working at a church while doing that in Tampa, ended up moving into a church plant in Orlando that was about nine, maybe a year old by the time I jumped into it, set up, tear down. So we bonded for a little bit over that life. Yep. So I was there for 3 years, went back to the church that I grew up in, was hired to oversee worship for a campus, and then ended up moving into oversight of all of the worship department. So at the time that I was doing that, we had about six campuses. So I was responsible for the worship staff, was a part of all the creative team meetings, oversaw all of the, 100 plus volunteers across all of our campuses, and ended up stepping out of that and moving over to Metro out in St. Louis, which is where I know you from.
Yep.
And at the time there, I was oversight of all of the creative and worship. So worked on the central team, executive team at the time. And yeah, so stepped out of full-time ministry after that year. I was a great big shooting star. That's what I was. I was just a beautiful, bright, burning burst for a year. So, but that was essentially my ministry career, how I got into it and where it began, where it full-time industry at least ended, full-time ministry ended.
Yeah. So you stepped out. What were some of the reasons that you just felt compelled to step away?
So I didn't realize it at the time. Well, let me start with this. There were some practical things that were legitimate conversations that were happening in my mind. Like, we had just had our first baby and we were living 13 hours away from all extended family. So every vacation was going to be spent going to visit them. And up until that point, my wife and I had lived away from family our entire marriage and was like, yeah, we're fine with that. We can build community wherever. And then we started asking the question, like, do we really want our kids to have a FaceTime relationship with their grandparents? And just something that we didn't anticipate, like, we were asked about it in interview processes, but it just, I'm not a very empathetic person. So until I go through something, I'm not going to really understand how it's feeling. When I went through it, it was like, you know what? Yeah, this is a real thing. This is a real thing. I want to have that relationship. So we were choosing a location over a job. The other part of it was, it's like, ministry is one of the only careers where it's like, you can't separate your community from your actual job.
Yeah.
So, when we moved back to North Carolina, I didn't want to force myself into a job based off what the community was or force my community based off the job fit. So those were the practical reasons why I had stepped out. The things I didn't realize at the time was there were judgments and beliefs I had formed through my ministry experience that were guiding a lot of thought process, both conscious and unconscious. Right? Like, our beliefs form our thoughts that then form our behaviors. So, I have a growing family at the time, like we're pregnant with our second kid. And so there's a belief that I have somewhere in there that has formed saying, like, I'm not going to be able to provide the lifestyle I want for my family if I stay in ministry. And, that's formed off of different experiences or things or conversations that I've made up about it. Now, is that true? No, not necessarily. There are plenty of families in ministry that have great lives and live a great lifestyle. But at the time, that was something I was considering. And I had gotten to the point where I was operating from a position where I didn't believe that, what's the way to say it? I felt like in the creative church world, everything is subjective. And I didn't feel like I could stomach one more subjective argument. I couldn't handle one more conversation if this series landed. I couldn't handle one more conversation about if this song did well here, based off of subjective metrics, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this song killed it here. Well, this song didn't kill it. And we're in the same room looking at it from completely different things because we all bring our own ish to the conversation and to the experience. So I was just, if I'm honest, I was just done with that. Like, I was really tired of it. I felt like I was working so much and pushing things down the field. And it was like, they're just arguments and minefields everywhere that I just didn't care to deal with anymore. I just wanted out.
Yeah.
I don't have any other way to say it other than it felt like anything other than doing that was going to be the move. It's like, I would go freaking mow lawns all day long. than do what I was doing. That was just personally where I was at the
yeah.
time.
Oh, I remember and, that. We had conversations even on that, and you were feeling it. And yeah. So that was the initial part. What are some of the things that you learned? Because you've got what, five years looking back now? Is it around
5
four?
It'll be 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be 6 years in the beginning of the year since when I moved out there.
Yeah, you moved out. You stepped out at your position at Metro, then COVID happened. I always thought that was interesting. I'm like, I hope Travis makes it because this is the worst time.
I am water. I'm you fluid.
You just keep going. You did fine. But now you have a little bit of retrospect looking. How many years total were you in full-time vocational ministry?
12 years.
Okay, so you have a significant amount because most people check out in the first five before they hit their five-year anniversary. The next wave is 10. So you actually went past both of those. And you kind of just looked at it and was like, I think it's time to just do something else.
Yeah.
Now you got some perspective. So tell us with that perspective, what lessons have you learned about yourself or getting yourself healthy or even looking back? Like, give us the lessons you've learned.
Yeah, man. I had no idea how bad of a position I was in. Like, just truthfully, and I'm going to get emotional even thinking about this, just feeling I, in so many ways, I had given up on myself. I had placed, every issue I was dealing with was everyone else's fault, and I wasn't taking ownership of what was going on for me. I had, man, it like I was so driven by the way I wanted to be seen or perceived. Like the need to look good was my aim most of the time. And it's even hard for me to like at the core of where I was operating from a position where I was not, I didn't accept myself.
Okay.
And like it manifests itself in the goals that I would set and the things that I would go after and the way that I wanted to bring about change. It was like, I can't, unless I've accomplished these things, then I'm not doing it. Like I'm not good enough and I'm not working the way I need to. I would have said I was receptive to feedback, but I totally wasn't. I was so being ran by shame, and I was out of integrity and didn't realize like how much that mattered. I just had no idea how much a small little broken promise matters. And I mean, one of the things that, I don't know if I've told you this before, like it's something that I've talked about a lot over the past year, but like in my ministry career for like that entire time, I was addicted to pornography.
Okay.
And like I had convinced myself, if I say something, I am going to like, I'm going to lose my job. Like I was so afraid and so ran by shame. It was like, is this where, I mean, like I think I looked at porn for the first time when I was in third grade, something crazy. Like everyone, like, it's just the, what is it? There are two people in the world, like the people that have talked about that they've looked at porn or liars. It's like, it's just everywhere. And so like, I hadn't even told my wife about it. It was something that like, I wasn't authentic with anyone, including the person that I would love and trust the most. I didn't even trust her with that information. And so I was alone in that. I kind of like dissociated myself from it in a lot of ways too. I was just like, I can just repress it. Don't need to worry about it. I can just move forward. And didn't realize like the ripple effect of what it would do to me personally. Every time there's opportunity for confession, and boy, have I like the scripture of confess your sins to one another. It's like, I used to hate that.
Yeah.
It's like, cause it was a threat to me at the time. It was a threat to everything I thought that I had. And I was operating in scarcity too. It's like, if all of this falls apart, who am I going to, like, how am I going to provide? Like how, so all this is internally going on. And it's like, what good can I do really when I'm dealing with that? Like, how can I lead people when I'm in that position? So one of the biggest things I've learned since then is it's not anyone else's problem. It's not my no one else is the issue. Like, it's I am my own worst enemy. I am my own worst enemy. And so, you know, now I actually do a lot of leadership coaching. I do marriage coaching. And the temptation in all of these contexts, whether it's even in your business, inside of a ministerial relationship, whether it's with your spouse, the temptation is there is something wrong or broken about them, not me.
Yeah.
And shame was like the ultimate roadblock or wall that kept me from looking at feedback. And there was a lot of fear internally. And I didn't realize how much of the beliefs, again, I was talking about, I'm operating from these beliefs. I don't see possibility in ministry moving forward. And they're being driven by these, you know, these beliefs are driving these thoughts, but these beliefs are also being formed by what I've made up about my past experiences and my survival instincts, right? Like churches, I feel like don't like to talk about the our biological wiring. Like, I don't know. How do you feel? Do you feel like it's a fair assessment? Like, it's almost like it's not off topic. It's scary to people because it's nuanced.
Yeah. And we don't understand it. And so things that you don't understand are always a little bit nerve wracking because you have no sense of truth or lie. Like, you're like, I get it sounds okay, but I don't know enough about it. And so I don't know. And so it can be scary. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but there is scriptural support for us to be able to go along with some of the scientific studies that have come out over the past couple of years. I think there's one out of UC Santa Barbara that's like, they estimate on average, the human mind is intaking around 11 million bits of information per second.
That's wild.
You want to know something even more wild, Timothy?
Yeah.
Your conscious mind is only processing 60 bits of those 11 million bits of information per second.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I don't know. Maybe I'm at like 75. Maybe.
It's possible. You are an overachiever. You are an overachiever. But what it is, it's like, so like the scriptures say, like, we look through a glass that's dimly lit. Like, we don't see things how they are.
Right.
We see through the lens of our past experiences and our survival instinct, and then we assume, this is where the danger is, we assume we're right.
Yeah.
And so I did not know what I did not know, but the reality is this is just human nature. Everyone is operating from a place that, let me say it this way, you're operating and making decisions more out of what you don't know than what you do know. More out of what you're unaware of than what you're aware of. And what I was unaware of was that all of these things, I have this, I'm out of integrity. I have these fears. I have all of these survival things paired with these lies that I have attached myself to. And I'm not opening up myself to being transformed by the renewal of my mind. And I'm just taking it as gospel, saying this is right. And then this is how it is. I see it as it is. And it's like, that's just not the case.
Yeah.
So I've just learned, like, I am my own worst enemy. Like, all of those things are always actively at play against me and against me seeing things as they are. So instead of coming at it from a position of I am right, I have to come at it from a position of what if I'm wrong? Like, what could be occurring for me? What's going on internally for me that's leading me to these places? Like, this person didn't do this and it made me mad. It's like, okay, well, like, why am I angry? Like, what unmet expectation is occurring for me right now? Like, what's wanted and needed for me that I'm not getting? And what's it provoking in me? So that was a huge thing for me to learn.
Yeah. So you went from not understanding, thinking you were taking feedback, to not getting the feedback. Eventually something broke through though, and you went, holy cow, I have totally missed it. Was there a trigger moment, or was there a conversation, or was there you read a passage of scripture, or was there, what happened to start going like, man, I'm not doing what I think I'm doing?
Yeah. So I went to a transformational event called the Revenant Process. Okay. This was about 2 years ago. And it just introduced me to the concept of that it's a deep dive into the things that we don't know, that we don't know ourselves. And it's laying out these concepts paired with individual coaching and these prompts and these exercises that are just like, we don't stop to think like, hey, what's going on in turn? Like, what's the internal dialogue right now? And we don't think that way. We don't even realize that we do have an internal dialogue. Like when you and I are having this conversation right now, you have a conversation in your mind going on about the conversation. And so do I. And so it's very hard for us to hear. Well, it's hard for me to hear what you have to say because I'm constantly adding my own beliefs to it. Again, looking through the lens of survival, like, hey, I want to look good, feel good, be in control. And I want to make sure that I conserve energy to stay alive. Like those are things that are actively at play in everyone. And I chose to ignore that or didn't, like, I just thought I was in more control than what I was. Okay. Is probably the best way to say it. Yeah. Like I assumed that I was in more control than what I was. And so I didn't look inwardly. It must be everyone else's problem, not mine.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you have some triggers in place that help you give more grace in moments with other people where it's like, is it me? Maybe I don't understand exactly what they're trying to do. Like, what kind of triggers do you have in place? Because this is something I've been learning just even in ministry. And so I'm always willing to add to the tool belt. I'm curious if you have any of those.
Yeah. So watch language.
Okay.
Watch your language and your thoughts. Language is, it is the indicator of what's going on for you. So as soon as I start to think or say something is wrong, bad or broken about it, them or me, that's an indicator. Okay. Right. And so even, for me, like, so when I went to that event, like, mm-hmm. I was able to see in real time all of the times that I was allowing fear or shame to drive my decision making. I had never correlated the dots before. I thought that I was in control, but really fear and shame were preventing me. I was allowing those things to be most important, and it was preventing me from being in integrity. It was preventing me from being authentic with everyone around me. And at some point, like this is the beauty about all of this, is that we have the ability to make a commitment and then live up to our word, right? We're made in the image of God who spoke the word into motion, who is intention. God is intention. He wills it, right? He makes a promise and he holds it. We're made in his image. We have the ability to make a promise, use generative language, a commitment, and then the promise makes us in the process of living up to it. And there's no shame, there's no bad when you're missing the mark, but the promise literally serves as a compass. And when I don't meet up to the promise, I get to look at, here's another indicator for us, like, what was more important to me at that time? And that starts to walk me down the path of what I was choosing. The end result is an indication of where I am aiming. And when I start to think about it in those terms, hey, in ministry application, like I have to have a hard conversation with someone. Some volunteer has been an absolute dumpster fire. They're all over the place. They're not holding the commitments that I'm holding them to or that they've agreed to, and they're not doing what they need to do. And you know, I can very quickly look at the end result and figure out what's going on for me in that. Like, what judgments am I holding? What anger? Why am I not having this conversation right now? What's occurring internally for me? Like, hey, you don't want to be seen in a negative way if you're trying to avoid this conversation. Well, I don't want confrontation. Oh, we'll justify it because we're con men to ourselves. Oh, we really need him, and he's got a great heart. Like, how is not letting someone live in integrity and holding them to their commitments, like not loving them and serving them and leading them, right? It's like we can flower it up and paint ourselves as the heroes, as we often do. But at the end of the day, the end result would indicate to me that you might be afraid of having that conversation. So you chose to give in to fear. So fear, being fearful was more your aim than leading this person. And it's not a judgment. It's not, there's no shame about it. It's just look and notice. And do I need to renegotiate my commitment in that moment? Because you can. It takes courage. Everything's that's worth doing takes courage. Mm-hmm. But that's a huge indicator. When I say does not match what I wanted to happen, or with what happens does not match what I say I want it to happen, that's a great time to investigate. Something might be going on for me.
How do you keep courage, specifically marriage or your close relationships, family? How do you keep current to make sure that you don't get off track with the shame and fear and kind of live in the feeling like you've got to be somebody that you're not really, or you don't really want to be? How do you keep current with those people?
I keep it with everyone. I mean,
I've seen it in real life. Like, I mean, even I know I knew you were having a rough season even when we knew each other, but I felt like we always were pretty authentic with each other, where we just kind of said what we were thinking and what we were feeling. I still remember the conversation we had where I kind of challenged. It was like, you plan on sticking around very long? And you told me no. And I was like, whoa, like that had to be hard for you. And you just got, we had a very current, open conversation, open relationship. So I know that's true about you in the healthiness and in this, as you've grown in this new life. I would call it almost a new life, because I think I told you this maybe a year ago. I said, dude, I've been watching your social media posts and you are obviously in a better place. Like, you are in such a better place right now. It was so cool to see that it was just, you were growing and you were getting healthy. I'm just curious, in this new Travis, this healthy Travis, if that looked different, like keeping current.
It's just when I am aware that this is actually a really great question, because I think this applies to people in ministry more than most other people.
Okay.
So if you're watching and or listening, this is really important. You are not more righteous than anyone else because of the work you do. Yes. here I was believing that I was God's chosen because I'm doing ministry.
Okay.
It's like I take less money because, you know, like it's the righteous thing to do. Yeah. And meanwhile, some dude who's owning a successful business and building the kingdom and loving Jesus probably more than me at the time is also subsidizing my life. All right. So with his generosity. So let's just everyone chill. when I am self-righteous, when I think I am good, that is such a dangerous place to be in. Like, in order for me to maintain health, I need to be aware that I am capable of the worst things. I am the most deceptive person to myself. Like, I am my own worst enemy. There was a long time, and here's where it's hard for people to hear this. Like, it's hard for people to reconcile that God can love them in that state. Like, this is for me, and I've talked with other people, but I mean, this is legitimately I was going out and doing coaching, and keep in mind, like, the coaching I'm doing, the guy who's leading the coaching stuff, this is for Fortune 500 companies. He's worked alongside Elon Musk. He's worked with Jenny Splendid Ice Cream, ESPN, Nike, Lululemon, this type of stuff. He's done trainings with the Navy SEALs. Like, this is corporate type of work, all based off a biblical principle, by the way.
All right.
And I'm leaving this session where they're just like, it was so hard for me to hear that, like, I can deceive myself. I don't have the best intentions. Like, it was hard for me. And someone eventually stood up and was like, you are accepted just as you are. You are accepted just as you are. And they were saying it seems like you got very low self-acceptance. Like, you are accepted just as you are. And I was processing it, wrestling with it, until I got on the flight home and I'm leaving Los Angeles. And on my flight, I just felt very, very clearly God say, who are you to not accept what I've accepted? And
that's big.
Yeah, just oh man, it's just like this like when you operate from that, and I mean, I'm jumping ahead because that was something I wanted people to know, like if you're like in ministry, but like you have to operate from a place of acceptance. And when you operate from a place of acceptance, it's okay to say, I am the least of these. It's okay to say that I am just as guilty as the person who like in the eyes of God, the murderer is the same as me. Like there is no scale of sin of like a, like I am not righteous without Jesus, without the gift. And every time that you believe that you are, you're deceiving yourself and you're cheapening the gift of grace. So like you best believe like my there's a direct correlation between my willingness to accept that and believe that to be true and the depths of my gratitude for God growing. Like they're tied together. It's like I cannot fully accept the gift of grace until I'm willing to accept that I needed it. Yeah. And my experience. This was my personal experience, and I see it a lot in people that I interact with in churches. There is this air that's like, it's lip service to Christ's freedom with an unwillingness to recognize that you actually need it. Yeah. And there's so much posturing. There's so much, your desire to look good and to be in control is overshadowing what God can do through you if you are vulnerable and authentic. So it's a scary, dangerous place to deceive yourself and not think that you need this all the time. I am more aware of my evil than ever before, and that's the way I stay on it.
Yeah.
It has to start with the awareness and then asking for feedback constantly.
That is great, man. And I agree with that. It when we come to Christ, like it, for that free gift of salvation. We come because we know we don't have the answer. We come because we feel the weight of our sin and we lay it all at Jesus. And then there's this weird thing at times within Christianity, at least in the Western, I'll say Western American at least, where we get on the other side of salvation and then we think we don't need that anymore. And now we just like, now I've got to like do good works and it's somehow all me. And there's this, goody two-shoes posturing at times. And the reality is that the day after, we need it just as much as the day we showed up with Jesus, because we are still that person that, yeah, sanctification is starting now. We are growing to look more and more like Jesus, but you still show up every day having to lay that burden at his feet going like, I can't do it. Like, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. That is...
We have a mission statement I own a men's leadership coaching company, and our mission statement is we're transforming ordinary men into legacy men.
Okay.
And the danger is assuming that because you're doing this type of introspective work that you're done. Like I did it. Like for me, it's like, hey, I struggled with porn and I came clean to my wife and praise God, I haven't looked at porn again. But the reality is it's like, the temptation is still there. Like the temptation to hide from my wife is still there. Especially like, dude, I travel a lot for work. And so it's really easy for, like, I have plenty of opportunity. And the moment that I think I'm fine, I defeated this bad boy. Or to think like I shouldn't have, or to feel shameful about it, right? I shouldn't have these desires. Why are they showing up? Like I should be better than this. Because that was another area I would go to. Okay. It is the shaming myself. But like they can be indicators. Like the thing that I judged most harshly about myself then becomes the greatest asset I have in clarifying what's wanted and needed for me. Like when I have a temptation to look at pornography, there's something missing between Janine and I, and it's not just like a physical thing. Like it's never just a physical thing. It's like maybe I'm fearful and I'm not being authentic with her about that fear. Yeah. Maybe there's something that I'm lacking courage in somewhere else that I just like I need there. It's saying to me something's not right.
Yeah.
And I can either shame myself into trying to will that emotion away because I should be better because I've been saved by Christ because his freedom's there, Or I could just realize I'm an ordinary man unless every day I wake up and start over, ordinary man. But I, through the power of Christ, can transform into a legacy man. I don't have to be ruled by my past. I don't have to look at the future through the lens of the past. I can make a commitment and live up to it and allow it to develop me in the process. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Yeah. So so let's go for it. You kind of went there. Was that the piece that you were going to give to encouragement to pastors out there? Is that, you said jumping forward a little bit there, but if there's some pastors out there that need encouragement, what would you have to say to them?
Yeah, I did jump forward a little bit. I'm going to be honest with you, bud. It's just, it was rolling, you know, like,
hey,
just...
it was great. So let's jump forward a little bit more.
I'll clarify it.
Okay.
I'll just clarify it because I talked a lot on top of it. So I'll just clarify it to two things. One, you are accepted in your current state. So operate from it and seek feedback often. Is one, and two, like, lay down the self-righteousness, lay down the posturing, because I'm telling you, like, in the eyes of God, you, like, your worst moment, your best moment, God loves you the same.
Yep.
So, like, lay it down. Just be honest with yourself as best you can. And this is where this work is difficult and why coaching exists. It's like, coaches look to give a perspective and be real with people when they're not being real with themselves, which is very easy to do. So yeah, you're accepted. So operate from that, seek feedback, and check your motive, check what your aim is.
Where should you start? So like, okay, I'm going to start being authentic. I need to clear the air on some stuff. Where would you encourage them to start?
Coaching.
Okay.
1000%.
Okay. So find a good, a coach in your area, like a life coach?
Life coach. So I would say some specifically in this aspect, it's really important that they understand these. I mean, this is all from a Christian worldview. So find someone that you're aligned spiritually with. But the best thing that a coach will do is to be honest with you. Like, coaches are supposed to be mirrors. Here is what I see. Okay. And the best coaches are willing to offend. The best coaches are willing to not, they're willing to believe in you enough to not believe the crap that's coming out your mouth sometimes.
Okay.
I, like, part of my coaching experience is I stood in front of high level executives that I was, what's the way to say it? Like, it's very exposing. I mean, I'm just getting my world rocked. I'm having to share a bunch of crap I don't want to talk about in front of other people. And it takes courage, but I wouldn't get to where I was. I couldn't get to this position if I was not willing to explore the call outs that the people had. It's like, I would say something and then they call BS on it and we'd investigate it. So that's what a good coach will do for you. Okay. And yeah.
What, tell people where they can find you, because I know you have yours. So might as well put that out there, because they may be asking that right now in this conversation.
Yeah. So the website is imuststand.com. You can find me on Instagram, Travis Altman. You're doing OBS. Do you do the lower third flash ups, or is this not
no,
that type of?
I'll put it into the description.
What a guy. Thank you. No, I appreciate your effort. You're doing a lot more than me. I just have a camera. So find me on Instagram, find me on Facebook, or you can follow us on imuststand. I'd be happy to work with you in any of those contexts. I'm telling you, there is such a difference when you actually stop giving lip service to Christ's freedom and you start to walk in it.
Yeah,
there's such a difference.
I agree with that completely. If there's somebody else out there and they jumped into this video or podcast because they were like, I don't have a title yet, but I'm sure it's going to be something about being healthy after ministry or something in that ballpark. And they may jump in and be like, okay, I'm in ministry. I want to get out because I feel like I'm super unhealthy.
Yeah.
What are a couple questions that they probably need to ask themselves before they just jump out? Like, what do they need to tackle and walk through and kind of look introspectively before they would make that decision?
Yeah. The first question I'd ask is, what is your aim?
Okay.
Like, what are you trying to accomplish? And I would venture to say that there's probably not a focus there. And a target, aim can be a moving target. And so we just get, I would want to get clear on what you're trying to accomplish. And the second thing I would say to them as an encouragement is, it wasn't jumping out of ministry that all of a sudden gave me a space to be healthy. It was my willingness. I came to the end of my rope and was finally willing to be authentic and courageous. I realized it became so clear to me that I was choosing being seen in a certain way over vulnerability and authenticity with my wife. I looked at what the end result of that, because there's an inevitable future tied to that that I did not want. And if I did not do it now, when else am I going to do it? I made a commitment and I lived up to it and came clean. And that just began the process of so much health and so much life and us connecting in ways that we had never connected before. And I'm lying to you, or you are lying to yourself, if you are saying it's because of the venue that I am in, it's in the context or the circumstances I am in. No, I'm sorry. You're not a victim to your own behavior. You have every opportunity to get healthy right here, right now. It just, what level of courage do you have and what is your commitment?
Yeah, that's powerful, man. Those are great questions. And I would even, I might add just a little bit, give yourself space. Like if you're sitting there going like, you may be burnt out, you may be frustrated, you may be in a rough season, give yourself space and walk through and navigate some of those things. And maybe I would even encourage, maybe talk to a coach, counselor, somebody that's outside that can walk with you before you just make a leap. So yeah, I agree with those. Well, you've already shared like where people can find you. This has been a great conversation, Travis. I'm so excited to see what God's doing with you. It's great to reconnect. Any last words for the people out there?
No, man. Other than just thank you for sitting and talking with me.
Absolutely.
I love you. I miss you. It's really great to see your face.
I know. I miss you too, man. I love you too.
And thank you. I needed to hear that. No, but I like one thing that comes to mind when I realize like what the AB has been for me in the past couple years is I'm tempted to turn into shame based off of how I treated other people in my time. Mm-hmm. And like maybe if you're hearing that and it's possible you're experiencing the same thing. I can tell you that shame is the most, it is the biggest deterrent for your growth, Mike. And it is not of God. And praise God that we are not who we were even yesterday, right? It's to be celebrated that we can learn and grow and continue in our development as people and become closer to God and learn more about Him. And so, yeah, just, I hate shame with all of my heart. Yep. And it'll never be a temptation that you don't deal with. But you have every opportunity to own the way that you show up and choose out of it and not operate in it. Like that's the gift. That's the Christ freedom, 1000%. I don't have to live in servitude to shame, which I did for years and years and years. Christ freedom is an invitation. So step into it.
Great last words, man. I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for being on.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, brother.
See ya. I think it's pretty obvious that he was very vulnerable and authentic in what he had to say. It's not easy to say those things and to look back and know that you might get some criticism for what was going on during ministry. I got to tell you, I appreciate him being willing to say the things. And I think one thing that I've experienced that I think you can tell even in the interview that he had was, as you are willing to confess your sins one to another, how freeing it can be, because you can finally see the victory over sin in your life when you start actually setting up the boundaries and having people that are really, really willing to be there to advocate for you and hold you accountable and help you see the victory through Jesus. And so we got to see all that in this interview. I hope it was beneficial to you. I hope you can even see that Travis is being faithful even where he's at right now.
even looking back and how he's gotten healthy after ministry. So hope this was super beneficial to you. If you'd like, subscribe, I'd appreciate it. Maybe share it with some people just to help them find freedom, health within ministry and maybe even after ministry. I hope they can find that too. But no matter where you're at, I hope that you're pursuing faithfulness in the ministry call that God has given you. And I'll see you next time.